Daenerys. The flies circled Khal Drogo slowly, their wings buzzing, a low thrum at the edge of hearing that filled Dany with dread. The sun was high and pitiless. Heat shimmered in waves off the stony outcrops of low hills. A thin finger of sweat trickled slowly between Dany's swollen breasts. The only sounds were the steady clop of their horses' hooves, the rhythmic tingle of the bells in Drogo's hair, and the distant voices behind them. Dany watched the flies. They were as large as bees, gross, purplish, glistening. The Dothraki called them blood flies. They lived in marshes and stagnant pools, sucked blood from man and horse alike, and laid their eggs in the dead and dying. Drogo hated them. Whenever one came near him, his hand would shoot out quick as a striking snake could close around it. She had never seen him miss. He would hold the fly inside his huge fist long enough to hear its frantic buzzing, then his fingers would tighten, and when he opened his hand again, the fly would be only a red smear on his palm. Now one crept across the rump of a stallion, and the horse gave an angry flick of its tail to brush it away. The others flitted about Drogo, closer and closer. The Khal did not react. His eyes were fixed on distant brown hills, the reins loose in his hands. Beneath his painted vest, a plaster of fig leaves and caked blue mud covered the wound on his breast. The herb women had made it for him. Miri Mazdur's poultice had itched and burned, and he had torn it off 6 days ago, cursing her for a magi. The mud plaster was more soothing, and the herb women made him poppy wine as well. He'd been drinking it heavily these past 3 days. When it was not poppy wine, it was fermented mare's milk or pepper beer. Yet he scarcely touched his food, and he thrashed and groaned in the night. Dany could see how drawn his face had become. Rhaego was restless in her belly, kicking like a stallion, yet even that did not stir Drogo's interest as it had. Every morning her eyes found fresh lines of pain on his face when he woke from his troubled sleep. And now, this silence. It was making her afraid. Since they had mounted up at dawn, he had said not a word. When she spoke, she got no answer but a grunt, and not even that much since midday. One of the blood flies landed on the bare skin of the Khal's shoulder. Another, circling, touched down on his neck and crept up toward his mouth. Khal Drogo swayed in the saddle, bells ringing as his stallion kept onward at a steady walking pace. Dany pressed her heels into her silver and rode closer.
"My lord," she said softly, "Drogo, my sun and stars."
He did not seem to hear. The blood fly crawled up under his drooping mustache and settled on his cheek and the crease beside his nose. Dany gasped.
"Drogo!"
Clumsily, she reached over and touched his arm. Khal Drogo reeled in the saddle, tilted slowly, and fell heavily from his horse. The flies scattered for a heartbeat and then circled back to settle on him where he lay.
"No!"
Dany said, reining up. Heedless of her belly for once, she scrambled off her silver and ran to him. The grass beneath him was brown and dry. Drogo cried out in pain as Dany knelt beside him. His breath rattled harshly in his throat, and he looked at her without recognition.
"My horse," he gasped.
Dany brushed the flies off his chest, smashing one as he would have. His skin burned beneath her fingers. The Khal's blood riders had been following just behind them. She heard Hoggo shout as they galloped up. Kaholo vaulted from his horse.
"Blood of my blood," he said as he dropped to his knees.
The other two kept to their mounts.
"No,"
Khal Drogo groaned, struggling in Dany's arms.
"Must ride. Ride. No."
"He fell from his horse,"
Hoggo said, staring down. His broad face was impassive, but his voice was leaden.
"You must not say that,"
Dany told him. "We have ridden far enough today. We will camp here."
"Here."
Hoggo looked around them. The land was brown and sere, inhospitable.
"This is no camping ground." "It is not for a woman to bid us halt," said Kotho. "Not even a Khaleesi."
"We camp here,"
Dany repeated.
"Hoggo, tell them Khal Drogo commanded the halt. If any ask why, say to them that my time is near and I could not continue. Kaholo, bring up the slaves. They must put up the Khal's tent at once. Kotho."
"You do not command me, Khaleesi," Kotho said.
"Find Miri Mazdur," she told him.
The god's wife would be walking among the other lamb men. and the long column of slaves.
Bring her to me with her chest.
Kotho glared down at her, his eyes hard as flint.
The Magi, he spat. This I will not do.
You will? Then he said, oh, when Drogo wakes, he will hear why you defied me.
Furious, Kotho wheeled his stallion around and galloped off in anger. But then he knew he would return with Miri Mazdur, however little he might like it. The slaves erected Khal Drogo's tent beneath a jagged outcrop of black rock, whose shadow gave some relief from the heat of the afternoon sun. Even so, it was stifling under the sand silk as Iri and Doria helped Dany walk Drogo inside. Thick patterned carpets had been laid down over the ground, and pillows scattered in the corners. Iroa, the timid girl Dany had rescued outside the mud walls of the Lamb Men, set up a brazier. They stretched Drogo out on a woven mat.
No,
he muttered in the common tongue.
No, no.
It was all he said, all he seemed capable of saying. Doria unhooked his medallion belt and stripped off his vest and leggings, while Jikwi knelt by his feet to undo the laces of his riding sandals. Iri wanted to leave the tent flaps open to let in the breeze, but Dany forbade it. She would not have any see Drogo this way, in delirium and weakness. When her kos came up, she posted them outside at guard.
Admit no one without my leave, she told Drogo. No one?
Eroa stared fearfully at Drogo where he lay.
He dies,
she whispered. Dany slapped her.
The Khal cannot die. He is the father of the stallion who mounts the world. His hair has never been cut. He still wears the bells his father gave him.
Khaleesi, Jikwi said.
He fell from his horse.
Trembling, her eyes full of sudden tears, Dany turned away from them.
He fell from his horse.
It was so. She had seen it, and the blood riders, and no doubt her handmaids, and the men of her kos as well. And how many more? They could not keep it secret, and Dany knew what that meant. A Khal who could not ride could not rule, and Drogo had fallen from his horse.
We must bathe him, she said stubbornly. She must not allow herself to despair. Iri, have the tub brought at once. Doria, Eroa, find water, cool water. He's so hot.
He was a fire in human skin. The slaves set up the heavy copper tub in the corner of the tent. When Doria brought the first jar of water, Dany wet a length of silk to lay across Drogo's brow, over the burning skin. His eyes looked at her, but he did not see. When his lips opened, no words escaped them, only a moan.
Where is Miri Mazdur?
She demanded, her patience rubbed raw with fear.
Kotho will find her,
Iri said. Her handmaids filled the tub with tepid water that stank of sulfur, sweetening it with jars of bitter oil and handfuls of crushed mint leaves. While the bath was being prepared, Dany knelt awkwardly beside her lord husband, her belly great with her child within. She undid his braid with anxious fingers, as she had on the night he'd taken her for the first time beneath the stars. His bells she laid aside carefully, one by one. He would want them again when he was well, she told herself. A breath of air entered the tent as Argo poked his head through the silk.
Khaleesi, he said, the Andal has come and begs leave to enter.
The Andal was what the Dothraki called Ser Jorah.
Yes, she said, rising clumsily. Send him in.
She trusted the knight. He would know what to do, if anyone did. Ser Jorah Mormont ducked through the door flap and waited a moment for his eyes to adjust to the dimness. In the fierce heat of the south, he wore loose trousers of mottled sand silk and open-toed riding sandals that laced up to his knee. His scabbard hung from a twisted horsehair belt. Under a bleached white vest, he was bare-chested, skin reddened by the sun.
Talk goes from mouth to ear all over the Khalasar, he said. It is said Khal Drogo fell from his horse.
Help him, Dany pleaded. For the love you say you bear me, help him now.
The knight knelt beside her. He looked at Drogo long and hard, and then at Dany.
Send your maids away.
Wordlessly, her throat tight with fear, Dany made a gesture. Iri herded the other girls from the tent. When they were alone, Ser Jorah drew his dagger. Deftly, with a delicacy surprising in such a big man, he began to scrape away the black leaves and dried blue mud from Drogo's chest.
The plaster had caked hard as the mud walls of the landmen, and like those walls, it cracked easily. Sir Jorah broke the dry mud with his knife, pried the chunks from the flesh, peeled off the leaves one by one. A foul, sweet smell rose from the wound, so thick it almost choked her. The leaves were crusted with blood and pus, Drogo's breast black and glistening with corruption.
"No,"
Denny whispered as tears ran down her cheeks.
"No, please, gods, hear me, no."
Khal Drogo thrashed, fighting some unseen enemy. Black blood ran slow and thick from his open wound.
"Your Khal is good as dead, princess."
"No, he can't die. He mustn't. It was only a cut."
Denny took his large, calloused hand in her own small ones and held it tight between them.
"I will not let him die."
Sir Jorah gave a bitter laugh.
"Khaleesi, or queen, that command is beyond your power. Save your tears, child. Weep for him tomorrow or a year from now. We do not have time for grief. We must go, and quickly, before he dies."
Denny was lost.
"Go? Where should we go?"
"Asai, I would say. It lies far to the south, at the end of the known world, yet men say it is a great port. We will find a ship to take us back to Pentos. It will be a hard journey, make no mistake. Do you trust your Khas? Will they come with us?"
"Khal Drogo commanded them to keep me safe,"
Denny replied uncertainly.
"But if he dies..."
She touched the swell of her belly.
"I don't understand. Why should we flee? I am Khaleesi. I carry Drogo's heir. He will be Khal after Drogo."
Sir Jorah frowned.
"Princess, hear me. The Dothraki will not follow a suckling babe. Drogo's strength was what they bowed to, and only that. When he is gone, Jocko and Pono and the other Khals will fight for his place, and this Khalasar will devour itself. The winner will want no more rivals. The boy will be taken from your breast the moment he is born. They will give him to the dogs."
Dany hugged herself.
"But why?"
she cried plaintively.
"Why should they kill a little baby?"
"He is Drogo's son, and the crones say he will be the stallion who mounts the world. It was prophesied. Better to kill the child than to risk his fury when he grows to manhood."
The child kicked inside her as if he had heard. Denny remembered the story Viserys had told her, of what the usurper's dogs had done to Rhaegar's children. His son had been a babe as well, yet they had ripped him from his mother's breast and dashed his head against a wall. That was the way of men.
"They must not hurt my son," she cried. "I will order my Khas to keep him safe, and Drogo's blood riders will..."
Sir Jorah held her by the shoulders.
"A blood rider dies with his Khal. You know that, child. They will take you to Vaes Dothrak, to the crones. That is the last duty they owe him in life. When it is done, they will join Drogo in the Nightlands."
Dany did not want to go back to Vaes Dothrak and live the rest of her life among those terrible old women. Yet she knew that the knight spoke the truth. Drogo had been more than her son in stars. He had been the shield that kept her safe.
"I will not leave him,"
she said stubbornly, miserably. She took his hand again.
"I will not."
A stirring at the tent flap made Dany turn her head. Miri Mazdur entered, bowing low. Days on the march, trailing behind the Khalasar, had left her limping and haggard, with blistered and bleeding feet and hollows under her eyes. Behind her came Kotho and Hago, carrying the god's wife's chest between them. When the blood riders caught sight of Drogo's wound, the chest slipped from Hago's fingers and crashed to the floor of the tent, and Kotho swore an oath so foul it seared the air. Miri Mazdur studied Drogo, her face still and dead.
"The wound has festered."
"This is your work, Magi," Kotho said.
Hago laid his fist across Miri's cheek with a meaty smack that drove her to the ground. Then he kicked her where she lay.
"Stop it!"
Dany screamed.
Kotho pulled Hago away, saying, "Kicks are too merciful for a magi. Take her outside. We will stake her to the earth to be the mount of every passing man. And when they are done with her, the dogs will use her as well. Weasels will tear out our entrails, and carrion crows feast upon her eyes. The flies off the river shall lay their eggs in her womb and drink pus from the ruins of her breasts."
He dug iron-hard fingers into the soft, wobbly flesh under the god's wife's arm and hauled her to her feet.
"No,"
Dany said.
"I will not have her harmed."
Kotho's lips skinned back from his crooked brown teeth in a terrible mockery of a smile.
No?
You say me, no? Better you should pray that we do not stake you out beside your magi. You did this as much as the other.
Ser Jorah stepped between them, loosening his long sword in its scabbard.
Rein in your tongue, Blood Rider. The princess is still your Khaleesi.
Only while the blood of my blood still lives, Kotho told the knight. When he dies, she is nothing.
Dany felt a tightness inside her.
Before I was Khaleesi, I was the blood of the dragon. Ser Jorah, summon my Kos.
No, said Kotho. We will go. For now, Khaleesi.
Hago followed him from the tent, scowling.
That one means you no good, princess, Mormont said. The Dothraki say a man and his blood riders share one life, and Kotho sees it ending. A dead man is beyond fear.
No one has died, Dany said. Ser Jorah, I may have need of your blade. Best go don your armor.
She was more frightened than she dared admit, even to herself. The knight bowed.
As you say.
He strode from the tent. Dany turned back to Miri Maz Dur. The woman's eyes were wary.
So you have saved me once more.
And now you must save him, Dany said. Please.
You do not ask a slave, Miri replied sharply. You tell her.
She went to Drogo, burning on his mat, and gazed long at his wound.
Ask or tell, it makes no matter. He is beyond the healer's skills.
The Khal's eyes were closed. She opened one with her fingers.
He has been dulling the hurt with milk of the poppy.
Yes,
Dany admitted. I made him a poultice of firepot and sting me not, and bound it in a lambskin.
It burned, he said. He tore it off. The herb women made him a new one, wet and soothing.
It burned, yes. There is great healing magic in fire. Even your hairless men know that.
Make him another poultice, Dany begged. This time I will make certain he wears it.
The time for that is past, my lady, Miri said. All I can do now is ease the dark road before him, so he might ride painless to the Nightlands. He will be gone by morning.
Her words were a knife through Dany's breast.
What had she ever done to make the gods so cruel? She had finally found a safe place, had finally tasted love and hope. She was finally going home. And now to lose it all? No, she pleaded. Save him and I will free you. I swear it. You must know a way. Some magic, some...
Miri Maz Dur sat back on her heels and studied Daenerys through eyes as black as night.
There is a spell.
Her voice was quiet, scarcely more than a whisper.
But it is hard, lady, and dark. Some would say that death is cleaner. I learned the way in a shy, and paid dear for the lesson. My teacher was a blood mage from the Shadowlands.
Dany went cold all over.
Then you truly are a magi?
Am I? Miri Maz Dur smiled. Only a magi can save your rider now, Silver Lady.
Is there no other way?
No other.
Khal Drogo gave a shuddering gasp.
Do it!
Dany blurted. She must not be afraid. She was the blood of the dragon.
Save him!
There is a price,
the god's wife warned her.
You'll have gold, horses, whatever you like.
It is not a matter of gold or horses. This is blood magic, lady. Only death may pay for life.
Death?
Dany wrapped her arms around herself protectively, rocked back and forth on her heels.
My death?
She told herself she would die for him if she must. She was the blood of the dragon. She would not be afraid. Her brother Rhaegar had died for the woman he loved.
No, Miri Maz Dur promised, not your death. Khaleesi.
Dany trembled with relief.
Do it.
The Magi nodded solemnly.
As you speak, so it shall be done. Call your servants.
Khal Drogo writhed feebly as Rakaro and Quaro lowered him into the bath.
No, he muttered. No, must ride.
Once in the water, all the strength seemed to leak out of him.
Bring his horse,
Miri Maz Dur commanded, and so it was done. Drogo led the great red stallion into the tent. When the animal caught the scent of death, he screamed and reared, rolling his eyes. It took three men to subdue him.
What do you mean to do?
Dany asked her.
We need the blood, Miri answered. That is the way.
Jogo edged back, his hand on his arak. He was a youth of 16 years, whip-thin, fearless, quick to laugh, with a faint shadow of his first mustachio on his upper lip. He fell to his knees before her.
Khaleesi, he pleaded, you must not do this thing. Let me kill this magi.
Kill her and you kill your call, Dany said.
This is blood magic, he said. It is forbidden.
I am Khaleesi, and I say it is not forbidden. In Vase Dothrak, Khal Drogo slew a stallion, and I ate his heart, to give our son strength and courage. This is the same. The same.
The stallion kicked and reared as Rakaro, Quaro, and Ago pulled him close to the tub where the Khal floated like one already dead, pus and blood seeping from his wound to stain the bathwaters. Miri Mazdur chanted words in a tongue that Dany did not know, and a knife appeared in her hand. Dany never saw where it came from. It looked old, hammered red bronze, leaf-shaped, its blade covered with ancient glyphs. The magi drew it across the stallion's throat, under the noble head, and the horse screamed and shuddered as the blood poured out of him in a red rush. He would have collapsed, but the men of Arkas held him up.
"Strength of the mount, go into the rider," Miri sang as horse blood swirled into the waters of Drogo's bath. "Strength of the beast, go into the man."
Jogo looked terrified as he struggled with the stallion's weight, afraid to touch the dead flesh, yet afraid to let go as well.
Only a horse, Dany thought. If she could buy Drogo's life with the death of a horse, she would pay 1,000 times over.
When they let the stallion fall, the bath was a dark red, and nothing showed of Drogo but his face. Miri Mazdur had no use for the carcass.
"Burn it," Dany told them.
It was what they did, she knew. When a man died, his mount was killed and placed beneath him on the funeral pyre to carry him to the Nightlands. The men of her caste dragged the carcass from the tent. The blood had gone everywhere. Even the sand silk walls were spotted with red, and the rugs underfoot were black and wet. Braziers were lit. Miri Mazdur tossed the red powder onto the coals. It gave the smoke a spicy scent, a pleasant enough smell, yet Eroa fled sobbing, and Dany was filled with fear. But she had gone too far to turn back now. She sent her handmaids away.
"Go with them, Silver Lady," Miri Mazdur told her.
"I will stay,"
Dany said.
"The man took me under the stars and gave life to the child inside me. I will not leave him."
"You must. Once I begin to sing, no one must enter this tent. My song will wake powers old and dark. The dead will dance here this night. No living man must look on them."
Dany bowed her head helpless.
"No one will enter."
She bent over the tub, over Drogo in his bath of blood, and kissed him lightly on the brow.
"Bring him back to me,"
she whispered to Miri Mazdur before she fled. Outside, the sun was low on the horizon, the sky a bruised red. The Khalasar had made camp. Tents and sleeping mats were scattered as far as the eye could see. A hot wind blew. Jogo and Ago were digging a fire pit to burn the dead stallion. A crowd had gathered to stare at Dany with hard black eyes, their faces like masks of beaten copper. She saw Sir Jorah Mormont, wearing mail and leather now, sweat beading on his broad, balding forehead. He pushed his way through the Dothraki to Dany's side. When he saw the scarlet footprints her boots had left on the ground, the color seemed to drain from his face.
"What have you done, you little fool?"
he asked hoarsely.
"I had to save him."
"We could have fled," he said. "I would have seen you safe to Ashai, princess. There was no need."
"Am I truly your princess?"
she asked him.
"You know you are. God save us both."
"Then help me now,"
said Jorah Gunnest.
"Would that I knew how."
Miri Mazdur's voice rose to a high, ululating wail that sent a shiver down Dany's back. Some of the Dothraki began to mutter and back away. The tent was aglow with the light of braziers within. Through the blood-spattered sand silk, she glimpsed shadows moving. Miri Mazdur was dancing, and not alone. Dany saw naked fear on the faces of the Dothraki.
"This must not be,"
Kotho thundered. She had not seen the Blood Rider return. Hago and Kalholo were there with him. They had brought the hairless men, the eunuchs who healed with knife and needle and fire.
"This will be," Dany replied.
"Magi," Hago growled. An old Kaholo, Kaholo who had bound his life to Drogo's on the day of his birth, Kaholo who had always been kind to her, Kaholo spat full in her face.
You will die, Magi,
Gotho promised.
But the other must die first.
He drew his rock and made for the tent.
No, she shouted. You mustn't!
She caught him by the shoulder, but Kotho shoved her aside. Dany fell to her knees, crossing her arms over her belly to protect the child within.
Stop him, she commanded her Koss. Kill him!
Rakaro and Quaro stood beside the tent flap. Quaro took a step forward, reaching for the handle of his whip, but Kotho spun graceful as a dancer, the curved Arak rising. It caught Quaro low under the arm, the bright, sharp steel biting up through leather and skin, through muscle and rib bone. Blood fountained as the young rider reeled backward, gasping. Kotho wrenched the blade free.
Horse Lord, Sir Jorah Mormont called, try me.
His long sword slid from its scabbard. Kotho whirled, cursing. The Arak moved so fast that Quarrow's blood flew from it in a fine spray like rain in a hot wind. The long sword caught it a foot from Sir Jorah's face and held it quivering for an instant as Kotho howled in fury. The knight was clad in chainmail, with gauntlets and greaves of lobstered steel and a heavy gorget around his throat, but he had not thought to don his helm. Kotho danced backward, a rock whirling around his head in a shining blur, flickering out like lightning as the knight came on in a rush. Sir Jorah parried as best he could, but the slashes came so fast that it seemed to Dany that Kotho had four Araks and as many arms. She heard the crunch of sword on mail, saw sparks fly as the long, curved blade glanced off a gauntlet. Suddenly it was Mormont stumbling backward, and Kotho leaping to the attack. The left side of the knight's face ran red with blood, and a cut to the hip opened a gash in his mail and left him limping. Kotho screamed taunts at him, calling him a craven, a milkman, a eunuch in an iron suit.
You'll die now, he promised,
a rock shivering through the red twilight. Inside Dany's womb, her son kicked wildly. The curved blade slipped past the straight one and bit deep into the knight's hip, where the mail gaped open. Mormont grunted, stumbled. Dany felt a sharp pain in her belly, a wetness on her thighs. Kotho shrieked triumph, but his Arak had found bone, and for a half a heartbeat it caught. It was enough. Sir Jorah brought his long sword down with all the strength that left him, through flesh and muscle and bone, and Kotho's forearm dangled loose, flopping on a thin cord of skin and sinew. The knight's next cut was at the Dothraki's ear, so savage that Kotho's face seemed almost to explode. The Dothraki were shouting, Mary Mazdur wailing inside the tent like nothing human, Quaro pleading for water as he died. Dany cried out for help, but no one heard. Rakaro was fighting Hago, Arak dancing with Arak until Jogo's whip cracked, loud as thunder, the lash coiling around Hago's throat. A yank, and the Blood Rider stumbled backward, losing his feet and his sword. Rakaro sprang forward, howling, swinging his Arak down with both hands through the top of Hago's head. The point caught between his eyes, red and quivering. Someone threw a stone, and when Dany looked, her shoulder was torn and bloody.
No! She wept. No, please stop it. It's too high. The price is too high.
More stones came flying. She tried to crawl toward the tent, but Kaholo caught her. Fingers in her hair, he pulled her head back, and she felt the cold touch of his knife at her throat.
My baby!
She screamed. And perhaps the gods heard, for as quick as that, Kaholo was dead. Argo's arrow took him under the arm to pierce his lungs and heart. When at last Daenerys found the strength to raise her head, she saw the crowd dispersing, the Dothraki stealing silently back to their tents and sleeping mats. Some were saddling horses and riding off. The sun had set. Fires burned throughout the Khadassar, great orange blazes that crackled with fury and spit embers at the sky. She tried to rise, and agony seized her and squeezed her like a giant's fist. The breath went out of her. It was all she could do to gasp. The sound of Miri Mazdur's voice was like a funeral dirge. Inside the tent, the shadows whirled. An arm went under her waist, and then Sir Jorah was lifting her off her feet. His face was sticky with blood, and Dany saw that half his ear was gone. She convulsed in his arms as the pain took her again, and heard the knight shouting for her handmaids to help him.
Are they all so afraid?
She knew the answer. Another pain grasped her, and Dany bit back a scream. It felt as if her son had a knife in each hand, as if he were hacking at her to cut his way out.
Beria, curse you! Sir Jorah roared. Come here! Fetch the birthing women!
They will not come. They say she is accursed.
They'll come or I'll have their heads!
Beria wept.
They are gone, my lord!
The Magi, someone else said.
Was that Ago?
Take her to the Magi!
No. Dany wanted to say, no, not that, you mustn't. But when she opened her mouth, a long wail of pain escaped, and the sweat broke over her skin. What was wrong with them? Couldn't they see? Inside the tent, the shapes were dancing, circling the brazier in a bloody bath, dark against the sand silk, and some did not look human. She glimpsed the shadow of a great wolf, and another like a man wreathed in flames. "The lamb woman knows the secret of the birthing bed," Eerie said. "She said so. I heard her."
"Yes," Doria agreed. "I heard her, too."
"No,"
she shouted, or perhaps she only thought it, for no whisper of sound escaped her lips. She was being carried. Her eyes opened to gaze up at a flat, dead sky, black and bleak and starless.
"Please, no."
The sound of Mary Mazdur's voice grew louder until it filled the world.
"The shapes,"
she screamed.
"The dancers."
Sir Jorah carried her inside the tent.